Okay, everyone, we have a bonus episode here for you. Lauren and I went on the 13 podcast.
13 is a podcast all about, yes, Taylor Allison Swift. And this was such a fun conversation, getting even more into the tortured poets department, Maddie Healy, Taylor Swift drama. So we just wanted to drop this in our feed as well. So any of the Swifties that are listeners can see it and listen. Such a fun episode, such a great conversation.
Also, for what it's worth, like, our thoughts on the album are continually like being enriched and changing, not massively, but every day as we listen more and more. So this has new tidbits in it that we don't even share, you know, in our previous two episodes, not the Maddie Healy deep dive and not the album deep dive.
Yes, exactly. And we are going to be back on Thursday with a new episode that is non-Taylor Swift. So for any non-Swifties who are pop apostles, you know, pop apologist stans, we're going to be back, don't worry, with a Thursday episode. It's going to be a day late, sorry, but we're going to be dropping our episode this week on Thursday, and then Friday we'll also have a general episode up for subscribers and Patreonies. We'll be back to regularly scheduled programming, so get excited for that and enjoy this episode with us going on 13.
Lauren and Chan, good to see you.
Hello. Thank you so much for having us. We're so excited to be here.
Well, we've been a fan of you, both of y'all, for a long time, too. So you guys just live in the world of celebrity gossip. Isn't it a fun world to live in?
It's a very fun world. It's a crazy world, especially this week.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Other than we'll talk a lot about Taylor Swift, but who are some of your favorite celebrities to follow, to cover, maybe any shows that you guys are obsessed with, anything like that?
I mean, I think a favorite of Lauren and I is Gwyneth Paltrow. We love deep diving, you know, the Instagram captions that her husband, Brad Falchuk, writes for her, extolling the virtues of those IG captions that are beautiful. She's a favorite. Who else?
I mean, I love iconic stars that have been A-listers before Instagram. So I love an Angelina Jolie. I love, you know, Brad Pitt. I love stars that I read about when I was a teenager and like that were covering the magazines. So I can be a little old school with my coverage. It takes me a little longer to get on board with like the Gen Z stars to really following Sydney Sweeney closely. But you know, it's a tumultuous world. I will say, even though we cover a lot of pop culture, we talk about Taylor Swift all the time. To a point where our listeners are like, okay, we got it. You love Taylor Swift.
I actually envy you guys because you're able to talk about her all the time and we want to. Sometimes we end up just doing that exactly. Yeah. But yeah, we have to check ourselves. Like, other people exist in the world besides Taylor Swift, right?
So this is good. We're both on the same team, right? We're both on the Swiftie side.
So let me ask the pop apologist over here. Do your opinions change about some of the exes? Like Jake Gyllenhaal is now in Roadhouse. Do you talk about him unbiased or can you not help but take your Swiftie heart and hate him just a little bit?
I mean, I'm sorry. Our podcast is nothing but bias. There is no love for Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yeah, he's absolutely dead to us and we do not like him whatsoever. So no, like, we are Taylor's defense attorneys in all things life and love. And that comes to any of her exes in the news. We come with that filter and focus.
That's really refreshing because, I mean, obviously we have a Taylor Swift podcast. So I feel like half of the time I have to preface it by being like, obviously I'm biased when I say what I'm about to say. Like, yeah, I'm gonna defend Taylor Swift until the day I die, like, for sure. So it's really cool to hear that you guys are the same, even though your podcast isn't just centered around Taylor Swift. But when you're covering pop culture, it's impossible to not somehow make things about Taylor Swift, especially in this past year, you know, with like the Eras Tour and just like everything with her re-recordings, and it's just so intertwined and convoluted. And it happens a lot too, like just in regular conversation, like people are like, oh my God, I'm so tired of like talking about her. And it's like, but you can't just not, like, she's just, even in the world of NFL and everything, like it's hard not to, right?
She's like omnipresent.
Yeah. I went to dinner the other night with my sister and some friends, and we spent the entire dinner talking about Taylor Swift. And like from start to finish, at the end of the dinner, we were ranking Evermore and Folklore, going track by track. It was truly like we had met for a meetup, you know? But that, and that's just what we naturally talked about. I actually can't really relate to people who don't want to just talk about Taylor Swift.
Right. I know. Right. How unfun is it to not be a fan right now? And then you do have those people that just want to poke at you and they're like, oh, Taylor Swift's nothing. Let me read you all these headlines about her. And I would always have a rebuttal because it's obviously not the fans who are writing those headlines. Mm-hmm. You don't know what you're talking about to bring it up to me. And if we want to talk Taylor Swift, great, but it's dangerous territory because I'm in for the long haul.
I tread lightly.
Yeah. How far are we wanting to get into this? So what were y'all's first takes on the new album? You were listening live. What did you think initially of the Tortured Poets Department?
I'm going to let Lauren speak because Lauren's journey was very different from mine. I actually had food poisoning in the middle of the night, Friday night, or early Friday morning. And so I didn't even get to listen to the album until like Friday afternoon, which felt crazy to me, you know, given everything. But Lauren's journey was much more fraught than mine was even.
I'm scared to speak, to be totally honest. I really represent the voice of Swifties in the community who found this album to be, not to be crass, but a grower and not a shower. Mm-hmm. And at first listen for me, some of these songs and the lyrics were not my favorite. And I think contrasting them with some of the lyrical sophistication in Evermore and Folklore, I was a little put off, to be totally honest. I actually like actively disliked this album at the beginning. And a lot of the things I thought were correct about my life and everything around me was suddenly thrown into question. But I did come around. And a lot of people are saying this. They're like, I didn't like it either at first, but now it's becoming, after repeated listens, one of my favorite albums. Did any of you have a similar experience, or was it just a 10 out of 10 right out of the gate?
You know, I got to say, for me personally, it definitely wasn't what I was expecting. So I don't know if that clouded my judgment on it, because at first I was like, okay, that was all right. Mm-hmm. I definitely liked the second half better. When she dropped more of those songs, I was like, oh, I can really devour these songs a lot quicker, and it's more satiating for me that second half. And the more I've thought about it, it seems to me, unfortunately Taylor didn't personally tell me this, but it seems that, you know, it's clear that she's not trying to write the radio bop,
right?
She wasn't set out to write Shake It Off Part Two. She's done that. We know she can do that. So she's stretching herself, she's leaning really heavily into the poetry side of it more. And so we get some chunky lyrics, some lines that are like, does that work? What is that? Is that rhyming with another line? And like, it gets kind of clunky and chunky at times, but that's how poetry is a lot of times. And I've heard the criticism from some people that a lot of the songs sound the same. And I kind of thought that also, but when I look at it from, okay, we're leaning into the poetry side, I get the feeling that, hey, she wrote the lyrics and then she wanted to create the music that just kind of helped carry that through, because I don't think she was focusing on making 100% the most perfect songs that have ever been created. So it is a little clunky, it's chunky, and it's almost just like word vomit, because she's gone through two very high profile public relationships that have ended, one a long term, one a short term, and there's just a lot of emotions there, and she's just purging herself, getting these emotions out there. So yeah, at first I was kind of like you. I was like, okay, not my favorite, but I like it. But then yeah, it is a grower on me, and now I can't stop listening to
Isn't
it.
That crazy? She's no longer people pleasing. She is getting out what she wants. She's saying what she wants. And do some of the songs sound similar to other songs? Yes, but that's because I Can Do It with a Broken Heart. She's playing what she's hearing at the end of a show, which is Mastermind, which is them counting down. And that's why it sounds similar. There is a rhyme and a reason when it comes to Taylor Swift. It's not just lazy music in the background. No, that's intentional. And I love the kind of somatic feel and the very dramatic of this music, the buildup, the crescendos. I love it. Through first listen, I was a little taken aback at first, and I did like the second half better because that's what I was expecting the first time. And then on my way home, re-listening to the first half, I'm like, I think I just wasn't in the correct mindset the first time, because it is brilliant writing, and I love it.
Yeah, well, I think a lot with Taylor Swift too is, and even when we were listening to it live the first time, like I knew that it would hit me different once I read the lyrics. Like when you're trying to just like listen and take it all in, like all at once, it's kind of, it's hard to form an immediate opinion because I think it makes such a difference when you read it. So we had our listening party. We listened to the whole thing when it came out. A few days later, I was on a flight. Actually, I was flying back from New York to Dallas, which is a 4-hour flight. And so I downloaded the lyrics on my phone and I spent the whole flight listening to it while simultaneously reading the lyrics. And it made such a difference because mm-hmm. when you actually like read it as a poetry and also just kind of, you know, where she puts quotation marks and things like in it, like you see it as a story because sometimes it doesn't flow like the way that the sentence is written. Mm-hmm. And I think that makes a big difference. And I also feel like with a lot of Taylor Swift music, it is going to take time for it to kind of adapt to what it is that you need at the time. I felt that way with Evermore. Like yes. when it came out, of course, I was like, oh my God, this is a masterpiece. It's wonderful. But it wasn't until a year later where I was like, wait, I relate to Happiness or I relate to or whatever song it is that it's like. At the time that she gave it to me, I wasn't ready for it. But yeah. a year later, once I had a whole year with it, I was like, wait, this is one of the best songs she's ever written. And I think mm-hmm. a lot of her music is that way. And people are just so quick to judge without taking the time to actually take it in, especially an anthology of 30 tracks. You know?
Right.
Which yeah. is why I'm so impressed with y'all's podcast, The Pop Apologist. Y'all are already getting into the songs and really? breaking them down and saying what they mean. We are still taking them in and don't know. There's so many different theories out there. What are some of your favorite theories involving this album?
I think, you know, I don't even know if you can call this a theory even, but I think that this is a Maddie Healy situationship unpacking album versus a Joe Alwyn closure album, mm-hmm. which is what I anticipated that it would be. And it wasn't that. Also to your point earlier, to all of y'all's points earlier, like, to me, this album is not a conversion to Taylor Swift album. I don't think she released this, you know, to convert yes. new people to Taylor Swift. This was like she released this because it was cathartic for her. Mm-hmm. You know, my personal opinion, and I actually sent a barrage of texts to Scott and Lauren saying this yesterday, like my thesis about this album that they didn't ask for. But basically, I just think, you know, if you're not converted to Taylor Swift at this point, you're kind of hopeless. You know, that's just my own personal bias. And this album is not for new fans or new people who want to discover her. And I think like this is an album, I think, for true fans to sit with, unpack, read the lyrics, you know, to really like digest fully because there's mm-hmm. so much here. You know, it's not like a folklore in that sense where I feel like it was instantly appealing to so many new people.
Yeah, that's so true. Agreed. And it's also like, to your point, when you know the history of like Maddie Healy and the decade long, like things that go into mm-hmm. it, then you understand it quicker. And like, you know what I mean? Like I 100% agree with
you. Yeah, you were saying that this was kind of an album for her, not her fans. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of her songs, we've kind of talked about this off the air before. A lot of her songs, she takes something personal and she reworks it and presents it in a way that's relatable to everybody.
More universal.
More yeah. universal. This one, it's like so specific. Not many people are going to be relating to all the different lines in the songs because they are specific. So I think you're right. She's not writing this for universal appeal. She's writing it for herself.
And I also yeah. think that, like, I think she had said at one point that one of the biggest overarching themes to the album as a whole is basically about, like, her level of fame and how, like, the media and people basically treat creatives and writers like almost like a spectator sport. Like, you mm-hmm. see someone that's creative, you want them to be tortured, you want them to create art, but then when they do, all you do is criticize it and judge it. So it's like she has so much about that too. And like the truth is that we're never going to understand that level of fame. Like we're yeah. never going to know what it's like. Taylor Swift is the most criticized person, I think, like on the planet. Like she cannot take a breath without every publication writing a think piece about yes. it. And no one will ever understand what that's like. And I think in this album, she kind of dives into that. And so it's almost like, especially with the second half, I feel like it's a look into the mind of the world's most popular person. And I think that's crazy.
The Prophecy. I just got the chills. Oh my goodness. That was such a heartbreaking song to hear.
Hurts.
Yeah, that she would trade in all her fame just to have somebody who wants to have her mm-hmm. around.
Yeah, yeah, it just wants her company. I mean, I'm curious about what you guys think about this, but I was thinking about it on the subway this morning. Like, Folklore and Evermore for me, they are so highly wrought and they're so finely and deftly created, right? And I feel like there's somewhat of an emotional remove across those albums because they seem like these more higher art creations, in my opinion. Like she was writing stories about characters and there was just like a little bit of a removal, I would say, emotionally. So it took me a little bit more time to like really sink into those songs and have them impact me.
with this album, I feel like her emotions are right on the surface. And this album is like much more sad. It's much more devastating. It's just so much more emotionally resonant to me. And in so much, like, honestly, more engaging to listen to once you kind of accept the new song, the new sounds, the new way she's going. Once you kind of get on board, I found myself fully swept away.
Mm-hmm. That's good. Amy, she is our Folklore and Evermore enthusiast. How do you compare this album to Folklore and Evermore?
I think that there a lot of the sounds I hear Invisible String in one song, and I hear, so I feel like there's a lot of inspiration that she pulled from those albums, but I mean, it's obviously different.
Because I also wonder how much Folklore and Evermore are fiction. It's supposed to be fictional albums, but then how much reality is in there and how much is in Tortured Poets Department too? Because I'm seeing theories about the whole album is about Sylvia Plath, which is something that I haven't looked enough into yet, but she's some literary goddess who was tortured and I believe put her head in the oven out of despair.
Bell jar.
So there's a lot that you have to wonder how much is fact and how much is fiction whenever she's writing.
Yeah. Well, because she makes a lot of references, like a lot of references. There's a lot of history and a lot of literature that goes into it, which I think is part of what, that's why we need time with it, you know, to just kind of like fully understand, like, okay, wait, why was she thinking about Cassandra? Does that relate back to Greek mythology and like Clara Bow and like everything? It's like, there's just so many layers. And so it kind of, when people are so quick to like judge and hate it without understanding, and I'm almost like, okay, but have you listened to it? You know,
right, for sure.
But I think one of my like hot takes is that I don't think this is like a breakup album. I think Maddie Healy and Joe were sensational like muses for her, but I think it's more so like she's telling us what happened and how it affected her, and like she's taking kind of all of it and, you know, talking about like her mental state, her like depression, her sadness, her anxieties and all of that because of like what happened. But like the other day somebody called it like a diss album, and I was like, it's not a diss album though. Like, she left Joe and, you know, she thought Maddie was her soulmate and they didn't work out, and that's really devastating, but I wouldn't say it's like a diss album.
I think I disagree, because I think there is a lot of really specific call outs she makes to Maddie. I don't think it's a diss album for Joe at all. I think it is a diss album for Maddie, or at least there are diss songs on this so maybe the whole thing isn't a diss album. I mean, it's 31 songs and a lot of them are just about her sad mental state. But I do think that she definitely has some scathing lyrics about Maddie's drug addiction, you know, who he was to her, how he treated her. So
does it,
I don't
measure
know
up to any measure of a man.
That song alone. But I hear you. It's maybe not a full diss album, but there's a lot of diss songs.
And there's diss songs toward the fans. There's ostensibly toward Kim Kardashian. So I think she's coming for people on this album. I don't think that's safe to say.
Are there any songs that you two are listening to on repeat more than others? Any songs that you're instantly attracted to that you're like, oh, this is my song?
It's so funny. I hated the song at the beginning. I hated Down Bad because I just couldn't get past the lyric. I'm down bad. Or what is it?
Down Bad Crying at the Gym.
Down Bad Crying at the Gym. Fuck it if I can't have him. I was just like, no, this can't be like capital P poetry. But then once I got past it, I find this song to be like so devastating and arresting. When she says the lyric where she says that she can't utter the word over, it's the outro, and it's like, I loved your hostile takeovers, your indecent exposures growing closer and closer. I messed it up, but that's the gist. And then she says, how dare you say that it's, and she can't bring herself to say over. I'm just like, I was crying outside YSL the other day. I'm just like, oh, wow.
Did you have a bag full of items though?
Yeah. No, and that's another reason why I was crying.
But how dare you say it's expensive?
How dare you say this is $10,000. Anyway. I'm loving that song.
As like pop culture enthusiasts and Maddie Healy, do you think eventually, I mean, he's going to tell his side of the story? Like, is that something that you like, that you're kind of looking forward to, or you want to hear? Like, you can't help but be curious, but like, I don't know. How do you feel about like, I guess the rebuttal? Because we haven't really gotten that before.
Do you want us to talk about Aunt Debbie?
Yes, let's bring up Aunt Debbie. I don't know if you guys saw this, but
Aunt Debbie, I don't know if you're familiar, she is a Matt Healy's aunt, and she spoke out on his behalf about the relationship.
What did she say?
She gave an interview to Daily Mail. This went up a couple days ago. Full quotes, like fully gave an interview on all of this. And she said, you know, we know what really went down between the two of them. Mm-hmm. What else? Like, she said, Maddie is not surprised at anything at this point. This comes as no shock to him. We know more went on here than she's letting on. Like, we know the full story.
Wow. Like a Meghan Markle family situation.
Yes.
I know. I feel like the only difference is I feel like Meghan Markle, like, excommunicated her father for talking to the tabloids. And I always feel like Maddie Healy is so messy that he's like, thanks, Demi. Thanks for coming back.
I'm going to have to read this. I said yes, but I was getting confused. I saw that his mom is on some wine talk show or something.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. And she hasn't been on since the release of the album, but it's like the talk or whatever, but this is with wine and crumpets at 11 o'clock or something.
And
she hasn't been on yet to have her rebuttal.
Sorry. And even Maddie said something, I think it was yesterday, he was stopped and he said that he hadn't really listened to it, but he's sure it's good, which is a nice thing to say.
That's a diplomatic answer.
The best way to say it.
Yeah. And he has to know. Publicist has to tell him. I mean, there's no way that he isn't aware and doesn't know.
We believe that was a fully staged moment.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. TMZ and absolutely. Like, there's not a world where he's just walking on a sidewalk alone and TMZ happens to be there.
Maddie, have you heard the album?
And he just looks up and talks to them, like, completely unstartled. Mm-hmm. They fully set that up. I actually found his remarks to be quite dismissive, to say he hasn't really listened.
Like, I don't really care, even though it's, like, literally what the entire world has been talking about for the past 5 days.
We're actually...
Yes, you have listened.
Yeah, if he and Taylor Swift were cuddling late at night talking about how Charlie Puth should be a bigger artist, he's listened to this album about himself, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
entirely. I think he's egotistical enough to listen.
Oh, 100%.
Would you want to live? I mean, how would you feel if you had a whole album written about you?
I got Thank You, Amy.
But if you did have a whole album written about you, how would you feel? Would you want to jump right into it? Would you be scared to listen to it?
You have to know. I would want to know. Yeah. You have to know, especially with someone at her level, and everybody else is going to know. You can't just avoid it. We're talking to pop apologist Chan and Lauren right now. I learned a lot listening to your podcast earlier. You were breaking down the whole timeline of Taylor Swift and Maddie Healy.
Yes.
And that was really interesting to me.
Thank you so much. So we did a whole deep dive on the album. Like, we did, you know, we covered a ton of the songs. We were heads down listening all weekend after it was released so we could be prepped for that. And then what we realized was so much of it was about Maddie Healy. And I think the parasocial relationship between Taylor and her fans is so strong that some of them are having difficulty grappling with so many songs being about Maddie, and almost like in a way that could prevent them from enjoying the music, because it's like, how could this girl be so obsessed with this guy she was with for what looks like 2 weeks? And so we felt like the fans need to know how deep this really goes, mm-hmm. so they can really understand what's at the core of the suffering in these songs. And so we released a deep dive on their 10-year situationship this morning.
That was impressive. I learned a lot. There was a lot that I forgot about, even her releasing Anti-Hero for the first time, mm-hmm. performing that at a 1975 concert. But you're absolutely correct. This has been something that has tortured her for a really, really, really long time. And some people thought that Joe Alwyn got the Calvin Harris treatment on this album because they thought this whole album was going to be about him, and it's not. But you all think, I heard y'all say that Midnights was actually a breakup album, you believe.
Definitely. I think so many of the songs in Midnights are Joe-coded 100% in breakup. I mean, I know there will be some people listening who think it's all about Carly Kloss. I'm not on that team. I think most of those songs were about Joe, like Maroon, I think, was a breakup song to Joe. I think Joe got so many good breakup bangers. And so I think that Taylor has really, like, given him gorgeous sonic love odes and devastating breakup songs.
Yeah, I think You're Losing Me was obviously about Joe. So good, so good.
Hits different.
I think that, you know, Midnights is kind of about a relationship, or the breakup, and that's, you know, detailed in Midnights, as we believe it to be, is about a relationship running its course.
Mm-hmm.
And this album is about a relationship that goes up in fucking flames. Yeah. Actually, sorry, I don't know if I can swear, but it goes up in flames. mm-hmm. And I think something we realized as we were doing our deep dive is that Maddie has been here in her life pre-Joe, pre-Calvin. Maddie has been here since 2014. Mm-hmm. So this was a long standing situationship crush, you know, will they, won't they sort of moment. And so this relationship really, when it finally happened and they were public and they were out and, you know, it was like off to the races. Then when it went up in flames, like we just got this incredible album about, you know, how terrible that breakup was, I guess. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think people don't realize that she even said that she was writing this for like 2 years. Like, mm-hmm. I think a lot of people like see a headline and they like, I saw so much criticism of people being like, why isn't she writing so many happy songs about Travis Kelce? And it's like, well, because that is more recent. Like, we'll probably hear more. I mean, yeah, we have like So High School, The Alchemy, like whatever, but that'll probably come later on because we're hearing what she was going through for the last, you know, like years before that, like almost like she had to get all of this out mm-hmm. before like, you know, having her relationship with Travis.
Right. And then people say, how does Travis feel about her writing about that exes? And even asked his mom, Donna Kelce, and she was like, it's a fantastic album and I could learn a lot from Taylor Swift. Like they're not just putting her down. You can't take away her feelings. I'd be gaslighting. She's just sharing her feelings. And yeah, there was someone before you, Travis, but thank goodness you're here now.
Yeah, he's not threatened. He's not threatened. No, I feel like all of her exes, Travis is the least threatened by Taylor's success mm-hmm. because he himself has such massive success also. And mm-hmm. he gets it. They're both in their 30s. They both have had previous relationships, long-term, mm-hmm. short-term. I mean, Travis had a dating show. You know, like, so they've each had their ups and downs in love. And it would be ridiculous to think, oh, you can't write about that.
No. It is honestly,
now that I'm here.
It's the craziest criticism. Someone asking that question and questioning how he feels about her releasing songs. Like, this is her career. This is what she's known for. This is what she does. She's one of the greatest artists of her time. You think she's not going to do that because of a guy she's dating? Like, these people live on Mars, for all I'm concerned. I can't relate at all.
Now, Chan, I don't know if we ever got your favorite most listened to song on this album. What do you think?
So for me, it's the title track, the Tortured Poets mm-hmm. Department. That one for me hits. It's like a perfect song. I think the lyric that like strikes me the most on there that like, honestly, like my stomach did like a somersault when I heard it is, you know, throughout the song, she says, who's going to know you? And then she switches the line to like, who's going to know me? And she says it in a really like breathy voice. And I just always find that to be very arresting. But yeah, I love the title track. I wasn't expecting to like it as well when all the song titles were released. I was like, eh, who cares? But I love that one. And I also love So High School. I know that that's a controversial love for a lot of people, but I cannot stop listening to So High School.
But it's perfect. Like it's a perfect take on like that young love. And also just like he knows how to ball. I know Aristotle. Like that's like the perfect analogy for the two of them.
Yes. Also, I read somewhere that it's kind of like a 90s rom-com song. And ever since I read that, I'm like, yes, it's exactly what it is. And that's why I like love it. It like belongs at the end of 10 Things I Hate About You or something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's such a great way to celebrate him. And it comes as the track 6 on the second album, which is always a whiplash coming off of mm-hmm. track 5. And how it all ends is definitely that.
Are you guys curious at all, like with Maddie Healy being who he is, do you think that at some point he could like appreciate that the art that came from this? Or do you think that he's actually just gonna like, he's waiting?
I think that he definitely can appreciate the art that came from this.
You don't think he can?
No, I'm thinking about it. It's a good question. Yeah, I think he can. I think, he, you know, his ego is probably going to get in the way. But he's been a longtime admirer mm-hmm. of Taylor. So I don't think he'll brush this off. I think he's in a new relationship now. But I hope that he can, like, appreciate the art for what it is and, you know, try to enjoy it if he can. That's possible. If it's possible to enjoy your own diss track.
I mean, yeah, I would say that the worst thing isn't hate. It's obviously in a relationship is indifference. And like they always say the best revenge is just living well or whatever. Living well is the best revenge. And so an entire huge album, 31 songs, 80% likely about you. I mean, that's pretty flattering by like the greatest artist of our mm-hmm. time.
That's true. That I love that perspective. That is such a good perspective.
Especially the scope of your life. Like all things with time, people move on, people find new, you know, things heal for the most part. And so I just think that like,
I would be just, this would be like almost like my greatest achievement.
Anyway. Yeah. So I'm a Leo. So I would definitely love to have a diss album about me. I would love it. Yeah. Well, just talk about me. That's all I want.
Right. Well, because he's such like a performative artist. Yes. And like, you know, like a tortured poet, a tortured soul. Mm-hmm. And so when I saw that, which now that you point out that it was probably staged and that 100% makes sense. I was like, yeah, like if any of her exes could appreciate something like this, I feel like it would probably mm-hmm. be him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How do you think Maddie is going to be reacting to this on stage? Is he going to be getting more belligerently drunk on stage? Is this a wake up call that he needs to sober up a little bit? Like, I wonder is he going to go even harder just to give a big middle finger to everybody?
A few days ago, he had a performance where he said, "You know who you are," and was really aggressive, wasn't he?
That was back a while,
when they were dating, when they were together.
No, it was 2 days after Taylor announced the Tortured Poets Department at one of his shows. He was like, "Don't come for me. Don't come for me."
I thought it was recent. My bad.
It like resurfaced.
Okay.
Well, and when they were together, they each mouthed during their concerts, like, "This song's about you, you know who you are," or something like that.
Triggering. I think everyone should be grateful for the fact that these two are a little bit exhibitionists, you know, mm-hmm. both of them respectively. So I think we'll hear from Maddie for sure.
I cannot wait. Yeah. Yeah.
For sure.
I think the most petty thing that I heard on Swift Talk, a theory, is that the Black Dog is Joe Alwyn's favorite pub to go to, and he's a regular there. And so she specifically name dropped that pub, knowing that Swifties are now going to inundate it.
Oh,
and that
dang.
Can no longer be the place Stop. That he goes to.
Petty.
So Good. She ruined Good. His favorite pub for him.
Yeah. It's but like, you know, he knew places where he could go hide, and Taylor took her own song, her own lyrics, and so, she outed him.
Mm-hmm. He's so private. You know, he like relishes that, you know, privacy, whatever, who cares? Honestly, the part of that song that I'm so worked up about, there's a lyric where she says, like, "You're making some esoteric joke, making fun of me." Mm-hmm. It's a love song on some level, because she's like saying how much she misses him and like, "Don't you miss me?" Like, and like, she's like looking at his location, it's forlorn. And even in that, she can't help but bring up the fact that he was like low key, like, ridiculed her mm-hmm. and was, you know, condescending toward her.
Resentful.
I think that's such a common theme. If you read the lyrics, there's so many songs on Midnights. And if you look at what Jack Antonoff said on the Bleachers version of Antihero, where he said, you know, "You're too sad to hang out talking shit about your famous baby." I think this guy was low-key a dick to her. And so I don't feel bad. I hope he can never have a drink at the Black Dog again.
And do you think he was rude to her out of spite, out of "You're the biggest thing in the world and I'm not yet"? Or yeah. "I'm only known as your boyfriend" kind of thing.
I think he resented her. I think that they met at a time when she wanted to make herself smaller. You know, Reputation era, she was hiding from the world. And that was like a perfect storm when he could really, like, you know, be her knight in shining armor. And then I think when she reemerged, you know, the butterfly that she is, even bigger and better than before, I think he maybe couldn't take it. And I think he just, yeah, he wouldn't let her shine. I mean, this is sprinkled across all of her songs.
Yeah.
Another thing I want to say about the Black Dog, the fact that she says that he didn't even turn off his location, that to me is the biggest like indifference moment. And that lyric was very gutting for me, I guess, because it's just like, wow, you have a 6-year relationship and you don't even care enough to be like, "You don't get to see where I'm at."
It like fizzled mm-hmm. out in the most banal, she said the most banal of endings, right?
Yeah, like the lion or something. I don't remember the lyric, but yeah.
I do think that one of the funniest posts I've seen in the last couple of days is that Joe Alwyn couldn't even land the lead role in the Poor Tortured Poets Department. I thought that was so funny.
That's good. That's good. I have not seen that one. Well, yeah, that's good.
Maddie Healy said in an interview, like, back in the day, that basically he couldn't handle the idea of being just known as Taylor Swift's boyfriend. This was like when they first were hooking up or whatever. He said that was like a big thing for him. He was trying to come up, you know, in the world himself.
Yeah, like this, like 2016, yeah. 20, yeah, not like not 2023. Recently. Yeah.
And so I think that had, and I don't know, like, I can understand on a very human level. Like, Joe Alwyn also is a person. And as much as I don't want him to enjoy a drink in the Black Dog, like, there's a part of me that kind of gets it.
I think as well with, you know, with his career not necessarily blossoming and kind of struggling. Yeah, you know, I had high hopes for him in conversations with friends, but it didn't hit. I think maybe if he'd had more career success, it would have been a
better road for them. I don't know. Is he a terrible actor? A little... He's so hot. And same Taylor Swift. You would just
he
think
was good in
work. The favorite, but he had a very small role.
To belittle her career, though, is giving me like Simone Biles' husband comments, you know, where he's like, oh, well, she was an athlete, but I wasn't even aware of her. No, she was the athlete. She still is.
Athlete.
You can't diminish her progress and everything that she's done because you're not aware of her and because you're not doing better than her. That's just so narcissist and belittling to say that. And I'm glad she's not with a person who's like that anymore. I'm glad she's with a fan that loves her and celebrates her success.
Totally. Yeah.
You know, I have to ask, I haven't gotten an update from Anna. If there's another artist that Anna loves, it's the 1975. Right. You've seen them. How many times have you
seen
them in concert?
I've seen them like 10 times in concert.
So how does all of the revelations that we have about Maddie over the last year, how does that affect you as a fan of the 1975?
You know what? It was a struggle. I'm not going to lie. It was a struggle at first when they like first... I guess was it last year when they like were first rumored to be dating? Because I used to want them to collab like artistically so badly.
There's always been rumors about that too.
Yeah, and like when she showed up at the 1975 show to play Antihero, like I was so excited. I was like, oh my god, I'm finally gonna get this collab of Taylor Swift and the 1975. And then it's tough, but obviously Taylor's my ride or die. But I think when I look at the layer of like, okay, if he's been, you know, a constant in her life for the past decade. And if he was there to help her write some of like Midnights, especially like he got to know some of her deepest insecurities, especially when it came to her relationship with Joe. And then for him to just ghost her, like, I mean, I'm Team Taylor 100%. But yeah, at first I was like, oh, man, this is kind of a struggle because I really wanted them to collab artistically, which in a way, if they're writing music about each other, you're still getting that, you know, art. But that's a good question, Nick. That's a good question.
You're welcome.
Mm-hmm. I've also seen rumors that people wondered if he's actually William Bowery. But Taylor herself has said that it was Joe Alwyn. So that's why I'm not buying into that. But it would be interesting if come to find out. I've also heard that she just threw William Bowery some credits to get back at Calvin Harris, too. So
interesting.
Who knows? Yeah.
Apparently Joe makes really $3 million a year. This is Spencer Pratt said this on Heather McDonald's podcast. So that's a source. I don't know if it's true, but apparently he makes $3 million a year from the royalties from these writing credits. It's a pretty nice, you know, parting gift.
Yeah.
I would take it.
Lauren and Shan, have y'all gotten to see Taylor Swift in concert before?
Oh, yes. Yes. Yeah. I have actually been to every single tour.
Wow.
Yeah. I remember, I think Fearless, like I touched her arm. I mean, I just like our mom actually, this is back when she was running through the crowd. Okay. I say that, you know, I have an OG, but our mom actually was at one of the concerts and she got mistaken for Andrea Swift.
Really?
Yeah. Like a security guard came up to her and was like, oh, do you want to go down to the box or whatever? And then when she turned around anyway. So
yes, we've
been to a lot of the shows.
Wow. I would use mom to try to get into every show then and throw down that gauntlet. Don't you know who I am?
Just back her up into the stadium. Yeah. Don't let her see her face.
We could have your mom walk around with Ashley. And then her name is just Ashley. Uh-huh. And see what kind of commotion comes up.
Oh my gosh. So good. And what do you guys, especially as pop apologists, what do you guys think about Thank You, Amy?
This is a song I'm not going to be reaching for, but it's fine to me. It's not one of my favorites off the album.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it's odd for her to bring back the drama and the feud after it's been so long?
I think I'm starting to subscribe to the theory that her and Kim are in cahoots about this. I haven't even told you this, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was like, you know, this will make you relevant again or whatever. This will be good for both of us. And that, you know, that she maybe actually asked Kim if she could write this song or whatever. And that it's maybe not even necessarily about Kim, but it's about somebody else. But she's just kind
That's
of masking it as a song about Kim.
When she says I've changed the names in any real defining clues, I mean, capitalizing K-I-M is a real defining clue. Mm-hmm. So I guess I just feel like I really struggle with this. It's hard for me to believe that it's about Kim Kardashian, although all the lyrics point to that. I kind of wonder if it's about Karlie Kloss.
Yeah, I've heard that. Yeah, I was kind of under, I almost thought like, it's too obvious, you know?
I am,
but then you hear that lyric, but then it's also like, okay, but is that kind of like the joke about it? Like, you know, so it's an interesting take, but I almost felt like it could have just been like in general, maybe directed at multiple people, you know, maybe yeah.
Scooter,
like, maybe Scooter, Carly, anyone that's wronged her. I've heard some people say, you know, maybe it's actually directed at Kanye, but she kind of took the stray with Kim, you know, mm-hmm. like it just kind of just depends on how you look at it.
Yeah. And I saw that right after that song dropped, Kim posted a picture with Carly Kloss. It was a group of people,
but yeah,
I think on her story with Carly Kloss. So was that Kim's response
yes,
of saying,
it's not
really
was.
Me, it's her? Or is she just kind of rubbing Taylor's nose in it? Or, yes,
I think Kim during the pot. Kim loves the attention. Are you
sure.
kidding?
She and there's also a theory that I've heard from Swifties online of saying, like, she's bringing this back up because Reputation is next, and she's just bringing this drama back to the forefront. Oh. So once Reputation, Taylor's version, comes out, we remember that time period and all the drama surrounding it, so that album hits just as hard as it did back then.
Mm-hmm. Which I think is true, because I had a lot of people ask me, as the resident Swiftie, what is their feud? And then once I would mention it, they're like, oh yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah, there are so many more Swifties. People either, like you say, Lacey, forgot, or they just don't even know that part of the celebrity world. I they don't even remember those rumors.
They're babies. Yeah, and I think that we fail to comprehend how badly this hurt her. Like, we saw Miss Americana, how she, you know, described how gutting this experience was and how she felt like everything she had built, her castle crumbled overnight. And especially being so young when it happened too. And it's like, you're building all these dreams as like a teenager and then in your early 20s. And then at 25 to have what feels like the world turn against you. I mean, we had our kind of a mini cancellation over some Kate Middleton stuff. And that was pretty an interesting thing to experience. I can't imagine feeling like everyone hated you.
Well, and I think what was especially terrible about it is that Taylor like had her own fans, people who were true Taylor, you know, lifers, turn against her. And I think, mm-hmm. you know, like for us, it was like, and in a much smaller scale, like random people on the internet.
Yeah.
But then it's like, okay, no, people who like know me, who thought I was great and amazing, like now actually think I'm a snake.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it makes sense to me that it still is upsetting to her because it was super traumatic.
To build on that, just like y'all are saying, you know, if I'm going to be the Taylor apologist, who are we to say how long someone can have feelings about a situation?
Mm-hmm.
She's an artist. She's an artist. So, I mean, her literal job is to write about those feelings. So for a lot of people, it's trivial, but to her, it really meant something. And yeah, it is still sticking in her side. And she does still have emotions to get out of it. And she's also singing about getting over those emotions and looking at it from far away and saying, hey, this actually turned out to be okay, because look at what's happening right now.
Yeah.
And you think that you're over something and then the wound opens up again.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Yeah.
And I've seen so many people be like, oh my God, she's in her 30s. She should be over it by now. It's like, yeah, well, so was Kim when she did all of this. Like, Kim was in her 30s. When this all happened. So it's like, you can't tell someone how to feel.
Right? Yeah. I also think that there's like this recurring criticism of Taylor that she's in her 30s now and she needs to like put away being dramatic about ex-boyfriends and like those kind of feelings, and that those feelings are juvenile. And I, to be honest with you, like those criticisms, I kind of understand where people are coming from. And there's a part of me that wonders like why, as a culture, we have such a disdain for feeling as you get older, like why you have to just become number and number to life, you know? And I feel like it's this strange expectation we put on people and we project onto Taylor Swift, like this distaste for still being a sensitive, lovesick person.
Yeah.
Like why that experience, you don't deserve to have that experience because you've lived long enough. It's just a weird cultural reaction, in my opinion.
You're absolutely right. Because we're coming into a time where we're finally learning that it's okay to be emotional, that you're allowed to, you don't just have to sit back and shut up and not cry because you feel a certain way. And that was the generation that we were raised in. And now we're trying to break the cycle, normalize that it's okay to feel your emotions. And it's okay to feel like that. And then, like I said earlier, to say something otherwise is a little bit gaslighting to say that you're just being dramatic and you have no right to feel this way. You need to be a mature adult now and handle it like a woman. Well, you are strong. You're putting it all out there for other people, and that takes a lot of guts.
Which you could also kind of explain why to us it feels so therapeutic to listen to her, you know, because if we've been suppressing feelings and suppressing trauma and feel like we can't vocalize it or be emotional about things, but then we listen to her basically put into words what we're feeling, like maybe that's part of why we find her music to be so cathartic.
you know, this is one of my favorite things to talk about, and I'm going to get on a soapbox for a second. I apologize if I start preaching because I am a Taylor Swift apologist. There's two things about, oh, Taylor writes too much about her relationships. It's all about love. One, name one artist who doesn't write about relationships. One artist who doesn't write about love. That's what 90% of songs are about. It's about all the different stages of love, the puppy dog phase, the breakup phase. When Adele got a divorce, everyone was looking forward to a divorce album. Why is it okay for Adele to sing about breakups, but not Taylor Swift? And then also, yeah, Taylor sings about these things. Society is telling her, telling women, you're worthless if you're not married. She's telling you why these things aren't working out. So what's she supposed to do? Not sing about it? Well, she's telling you why. She can't win either way.
Right,
and it really frustrates me. It's like there's no way for her to win when it comes to someone criticizing her singing about relationships.
Yeah.
I'm done.
I love it. I'm here for it.
I also think Adele is almost a little bit of an outlier in the way that she's celebrated for continual, like having a lot of breakup songs. I almost feel like when men write breakup music or music that's about like, you know, the object of their affection, that is, you know, universally, I think, accepted as like romantic and just incredible. And when I think a lot of times when the idea that a woman is like gazing upon a man and it's like the female gaze is something that I think as a culture, we also, you know, we don't sit well with it. And I think that just goes back to like, you know, art across time. We're not used to the female gaze. We're used to and comfortable with the male gaze.
Yeah.
And when it comes to, you know, especially the female gaze and lust, I mean, she has Dress. She has a song on this album, Guilty of Sin. It's a steamy song.
He's
saying that, yeah, I can sing about these thoughts and imaginations also, right?
Yeah, which I love it. I love that she's now at a point where it's like, I don't care. I don't have to be, you know, pleasing the moms of the people listening to this music. Like, if this is just exactly what I want to put out there.
Yeah, which is one of those other situations where she can't win. If she sings Shake It Off, it's like, oh my gosh, she only writes music for kids. And then she sings Guilty of Sin, and they're like, why is she not writing music for my kids?
Right.
Yeah.
Totally. It's so true.
And it's like, it's just so frustrating because then it's just like, what do you want from her? Like, she just cannot win. And I think in this album, she explores that a lot.
Yeah.
Like, I think, like, you know, like her like perspective, and she's like, I had said in one of our earlier episodes, like, I feel like in this album, she's just using the words that she wants to use to express the feelings that she wants to express. And like, she didn't send it to anybody to like, you know, double check. She's just like, here it is. And
send.
and I just love that for her. And I think that's part of what makes this so powerful. That's just like a body.
Yeah. I also think, I'm curious if any of you have had a similar experience, you know, since we're in the safe trust tree of all being Swifties. I do think we're living in a time where it's, like, the pitchforks have always been out for Taylor Swift, but especially given the last year and just kind of her media, like, presence being everywhere, like, I just feel like the pitchforks have never been, like, sharper or higher, like, waiting for her to fall. And that's kind of a theory of mine that, like, why a lot of reviews are bad about this album. I just think people want to see her fail. They, like, she's too big. You know, she had, you know, her tour was too big. It was too crazy. It, you know, affected the GDP too much, whatever. And I do think it's been a really interesting like moment in culture and even across like friend groups. Like there was an article that came out, like, I think in The Cut about like when Taylor Swift like ends a friendship or something like that. Like it can be a really polarizing thing now to be a Swiftie. And I don't know if that's been your experience. I mean, obviously you have the Taylor Swift podcast, but have you experienced that?
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, personally, I got just kind of feel like just in general, the way that we are as a society.
Yeah.
It's extremely polarizing on all issues. You can't really have a middle of the road opinion. You have to have an extreme view on something either way. And whatever that extreme view is sucks. It's awful. You're a terrible person kind of no matter what side it is. And also, I'm not saying this is right, but almost when you have a lot of haters, that just means you're bigger. The more haters you have, the bigger you are. So like, not that it should be a badge of honor, but it's like she's the biggest person in the world. So yeah, people do root for her to fail. Just like people were rooting against Tom Brady to win all of his Super Bowls.
Yeah.
He was great. What do you want him to do? Stop playing football because he's so good? No, they're just going to keep doing what they do, whether you like it or not.
Yeah.
People just don't want to believe in the success. They want to think that she is overhyped, oversaturated, that she hasn't done and earned everything that she did. Even all the haters in the headlines on this latest album, she's breaking records that she started herself. She's always popping everything. But rather than give her the credit that she deserves, people want to say that she's a witch and she's casting spells and putting narcotics in her song. And she hears all that and then addresses it. But people are still like, but I don't like her. I don't get her.
Right.
And it's like, you've never listened to an album. You don't understand. And
there's
a
snobbery.
Yeah.
It's always the people who I've only heard Shake It Off in 22. Or me. Don't come for me, Swifties. But yeah.
But it's not, they haven't listened. They legitimately haven't listened. I believe this to my core. If you've actually given her music a proper shot and listened to the albums, you're a Swiftie. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And yeah, it's a spectrum. Maybe, maybe not as Swiftie as us.
That's true.
But yeah, like you see her talent. And I had someone recently, bring up the fact that her dad invested in the record company or something like that. Like, I don't know those details, but
yeah,
that
he bought her success.
Yes. That he bought her success. And I'm just like, I can't even believe that you think that he's somehow they're continuing to pull the wool over her eyes and just buy her way to the top as she just reinvents what the top even is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I recently saw a lot of criticism from I forget what review it was, but they were saying she's not giving anyone else a chance because she keeps putting out all of her albums and stuff. And my reaction is if other artists want to be as successful as her, they need to work as hard as her. You know what I mean? It's such a baffling way to look at it. Like going back to Tom Brady, did he just go easy on the other teams just because he was the best?
Yeah,
you know, do people tell LeBron James, hey, maybe go easy on this team because they haven't had a win in a while? No.
Is Marvel supposed to stop making movies?
Right.
And so it's laughable.
It's so frustrating.
And a true artist would never think that way. A true artist who's really interested in their body of work, the canon that they're creating, their legacy, they're not thinking in terms of well, am I going to be number one on the Billboard for X number of weeks? And this person's stealing that from me. That's just, I think that someone who, is actually really considered and thoughtful with the way they put out art, they're thinking about this in a much less grasping, greedy, commercial way. And, sorry that Taylor's so prolific, but just because she's putting out a lot of music, that doesn't mean that there aren't also other amazing artists.
Right.
So,
and she's still making room for people. I mean, that's the whole point of Clara Bow, is that everybody's prepped and primed to be the next Taylor Swift, not to join her in her success. It's who's going to replace her and become the next one.
And
she's always said she's more than happy to share the stage. We don't have to be pitted against each other. We all have crowns.
Yeah.
Everyone who's ever worked with her have said that how hard of a worker she is. So where are the people that didn't like working with her?
Right.
Totally.
Hear from them.
Yeah. That's such a great point. Part. Yeah. I don't know that I've even heard of one story where someone was like, I hated working with Taylor Swift. She was terrible to work with.
No.
We would know. We all would know.
Yeah. We would definitely know.
We are talking to Pop Apologist stars Chan and Lauren, sisters that have an excellent podcast where they break everything down. I want to know, when did y'all become celebrity focused? When did you realize as sisters that this was something you wanted to pursue?
When I learned to read, I think that was my first moment when I could pick up an Us Weekly.
Yeah.
I don't remember a beginning.
There was no beginning. It was just from the womb, you know?
Is your mom a big celebrity fan?
Actually, I feel like my mom is pretty anti-gossip. I actually don't think she's that interested in celebrities at all.
No.
Interesting.
She has her, favorites, but she's not, an aficionado.
Yeah.
It's been really cool to talk to you guys from, to look at her music from the lens of, truly, pop culture. Because on our podcast, we talk we go through the lyrics and the language of it and her effects and emotions and feelings. But it's really cool to also look at it through a different lens. So I just want to thank you guys, because this conversation has been really, it's been really interesting.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah.
And I want to pry more a little bit deeper. I know that Chan, you live in New York, right?
I live in New York, yeah.
Okay, and Lauren's there visiting from Puerto Rico.
Mm-hmm.
What a cool place to live. Oh my gosh, jealous of that. What else can people look forward to you all releasing soon? What's on your plan? What's on your manifesto, if you will? Do you have a lot of Taylor Swift coming up?
I mean, thank you so much for asking. I think that, right now we have that deep dive on Tortured Poets Department. We also have the deep dive on Taylor and Maddie. So that's probably going to be interesting to people who are listening. And then we just kind of get on and chat about
honestly, Taylor and other celebrities yes. every Wednesday and then Friday on Patreon. Yeah. So it's, you know, it's a continual conversation.
That's really awesome. And that deep dive with Taylor and Maddie is such important context. So thank you for taking the time to do that.
Of course.
It's our public service.
It was our pleasure.
Well, thanks so much for taking the time to chit chat with us. It's awesome meeting new Swifties or new Swifties to us, meeting more Swifties. And it's just been a blast to pick your brains and get your thoughts on this new album. So we wish you all continued success. And we hope all of our listeners go and check you guys out.
We love your perspective. We love your podcast. Where can everybody find you?
So we are Pop Apologists on Instagram, YouTube, everywhere you listen to podcasts, Pop Apologists.
That's right. And my personal is Lauren Having Fun.
In case.
Just in case. Pop Apologists. Thank you guys so much. This has been such a blast.
Thank you.
Awesome.
Guys.
Bye. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
That's all for now, folks. Don't forget, give us a 5-star review, hit us up on Instagram at Pop Apologists, and we will see you next week, live every Wednesday.